Welcome back to another episode of the Gene Smith Podcast presented by Incova Insurance, where we sit down to speak with the Ohio State Senior Vice President and Wolf Foundation Endowed Athletics Director to talk about the current state of OSU athletics. My name is Ben Waite, and I am joined, as always, by Mr. Gene Smith. Gene, before we dive into things, how are we doing today?
Doing great, Ben. Thanks for doing this. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Spring is a busy time. Commencement is right around the corner. We just finished spring football. What else do we have going on campus right now for our Buckeyes?
We got a lot going on. Men's golf is hosting the Kepler Invitational out at our golf course, which is an outstanding tournament. And then we have our men's lacrosse team is taking on that team up north, actually tonight, Friday night. And we have other teams that are on the road. Men's tennis is on the road. They're have an opportunity this weekend to clinch their 19th straight Big Ten championship. They're playing at Nebraska and Wisconsin. Or if they win one, they'll clinch. Women's tennis is hosting a contest today at 4:30 here on campus. Hopefully the weather holds up and we're good there. But we also have softball going on. It's just a lot going on this weekend, and really exciting time for our spring sports. Rowing is at the Big Ten Championships down in Sarasota, Florida. There's a lot going on.
A lot going on, a lot of opportunities to get more hardware for the Buckeyes. So excited for those championship opportunities. But today we're very blessed to have two of the most notable Buckeyes for our football program that we currently have on campus. Very excited to have them joining us. Our first guest is in his eighth season on the Ohio State staff and is the team's co-offensive coordinator and wide receivers coach. As a Buckeye, he was part of four Big Ten championship teams, followed by a successful seven-year career in the NFL. A native of North Canton, Ohio, welcome Brian Hartline.
Yeah, thanks for having you guys. Looking forward to catching up with you guys and talking to little Buckeyes.
Absolutely. It's my favorite thing to talk about. Our second guest is in his second year on the Ohio State staff and his first as the team's linebackers coach. As a Buckeye, he played on four Big Ten championship teams, was a three-time All-American and two-time Big Ten Conference Defensive Player of the Year. He then had a successful eight-year career in the NFL before going into coaching. A native of Wayzata, Minnesota. Did I say that correctly? Welcome, James Laurinaitis.
Thank you. That was nicely done. Nicely done. Wayzata is, a lot of people say Wayzata, but that's good. Wayzata, that's the way to go.
Always looking up the pronunciations to make sure I don't screw up too much. But thank you guys for being with us. And my question was, when you guys thought about coming into coaching, what did the opportunity to coach at your alma mater mean for you, and how impactful is it to be back on campus and working for the team that you guys both played for?
Well, I'll start with it, James, before you go. So my plan was never to be a coach. Truthfully, I was back in town. My brother was here with Coach Meyer, and they were kind of pulling at me to kind of come back in the building. There was a fad going on where former players could come back and practice during bowl prep with the team prior to their game. And I remember Bobby Carpenter being back, and Bourne was back, and somehow I got looped into coming back. I was up the road, first year not playing, and I was like, sure, let's do it. Grabbed my old pads, grabbed my old helmet, went to the scout team with the Buckeyes. I was kind of just being me, right? I was kind of, coaching up Terry McLaurin and Paris and Austin Mack and Ben Vick, and I was just kind of being me. After that, Coach Meyer blessed me with an opportunity to be a coach at Ohio State. I adamantly told him, heck no. And I decided to not do that. And then, over time, my batteries, I think, naturally recharged. He reached back out in February of that spring following the bowl game and kind of brought the opportunity back to me again. I just felt like, God was kind of, trying to touch to me. Higher power was trying to talk to me. And my batteries were fully recharged, and I got back in the building as an intern in the spring of 17. So ever since then, I've been hooked, and I can't imagine myself being anywhere else.
Yeah, I think for me it was always – it's funny because when I was playing, a lot of my teammates would always say to me, and even the coaches would say to me, oh, you're going to be a coach when you're done. You're going to be a coach when you're done. And I'd always say, like, no, like, the hours are crazy. we already put in enough hours as players. There's no way. And so when you get done playing in the National Football League, you're a little bit burnt out on football altogether. It's hard when you realize, like, I can't perform at the level that I want to anymore to keep playing the game that I love, that I've played since fourth grade. And so I went to media for 5 years, and then I kept having the itch. Every time I was in media calling games, when I talked to coaches, you start talking ball, X's and O's, and I'd be like, man, I got to try this out before I get too old. And so thankfully another Buckeye, Marcus Freeman, gave me an opportunity to coach. And once I got into it, the ultimate goal was always to get back to Ohio State. It's been the dream position for me to be able to coach the linebackers at my alma mater, and just grateful for the opportunity that Coach Day gave me.
Guys, talk a little bit about, you know, we're blessed in our athletic department to have, you know, over 50 former Buckeyes working in our athletic department. And we have our leadership institute is ran by former student athletes, for example. All five of them are former student athletes, recent hires. Talk about the benefits that you guys have being coaches here and being embedded as Buckeyes and what Buckeye Nation loves so much. Talk a little bit about that and what it means to you.
Go ahead, James. You can start it off.
Yeah, I think ultimately for me, so I'm not from Ohio, right? So I came in from Minnesota, as Bennett said, and I remember just kind of feeling like adopted by Buckeye Nation as a whole. But the fan base is incredible. The athletic department I felt was incredible. I always felt supported, you know, as a student athlete. And I think even more so now, like you said, with the Leadership Institute, with everything that's kind of in place for all of our student athletes, it's been presented in a way that is, I think, so powerful and so impactful to everyone that's still here. But I also think when you're a part of this brotherhood, and I think it spans even further than football, as you take note of other sports. I remember back in the day, Tress used to make us go to the other, I remember going to a volleyball game one time, B-Hart, where, you know, Tress would make us go to the women's volleyball game, and then we'd have to go to a basketball game, and you were supporting other student athletes on those student athlete days. But you felt whenever you were in class with one of them, it was like this bond that we were student athletes, right? And you always felt that the athletic department was going to support you in any way possible when you were done playing. I think it's what makes Ohio State so special as a whole, is the fact that when you have the largest alumni base in the country, right, you're the biggest fan base in the country, there's a ton of opportunity. But you have to tap into that opportunity while you're there, and you have to continue those relationships. And I've always felt like this place has always had my back, and obviously it's become home for me. And so I've always been grateful, but I think it spans bigger than football, as you said, Gene. It goes to all the sports. There's always been a willingness to help student athletes continue their careers at their alma mater, which I think is very unique and it's very special. And I think also the city of Columbus provides that, right? The city of Columbus being as nice as it is and obviously growing extremely fast, it provides a ton of opportunities for former student athletes.
Well, I would say too, I think for us is that, you know, James and I being humbled to be back here, although you weren't born here, James, I wasn't like a major Buckeye fan growing up. So my perspective is one thing, but I think what we're hitting on is it's always about the student athlete. It always is. Everything's about the student athlete. So to have former players come back, or former Buckeyes that were in their same shoes, to share their experiences, to provide knowledge for those that are coming forth, is the most critical component of it all. I think your ability to share knowledge is what it's all about. I mean, in my mind, so just because you did it doesn't mean you're maybe the best at coaching it, but there's definitely some guys that did it at a pretty darn good level that are probably even better at coaching it. I think me and James maybe fit into that category. So to help guys give perspective, to give viewpoints, to share experiences that we experienced so they don't have to, I think is critical. But at the end of the day, I think we've done a great job at Ohio State, Gene, like you've said, having more than 50, you know, former Buckeyes. I hate that we say in former. Once you're a Buckeye, you're always a Buckeye. But, you know, former athletes, I would say, to be able to be around that, the same other athletes of the next generation, I think is critical. That's what I would want my son. I would want my son surrounded by men or women that have done it prior to them, so they can learn from them, so they could grow from them. And so Ohio State that does that at the highest level, and the resume shows itself.
Tying that a little bit, James, you mentioned it. We have so many former current Buckeyes. We have a lot of alums who were athletes here coming back to live in Columbus and make their lives here. Talk a little bit about how that's beneficial to the football program, and why you think that is. What is it about Columbus and Ohio State that makes all of so many athletes come back and live here and raise their families?
Well, I think first off, a lot of people don't understand what Columbus, Ohio has to offer until they're here. I mean, you see that in recruiting all the time, is people will hear Ohio, and if they're from Texas, if you're from California, if you're from Florida, they think of a flyover state. A lot of people don't know Columbus is the biggest city in Ohio. They think Cleveland or Cincinnati naturally. And all of a sudden you get them on campus, and then you get them downtown, you get them in the short north, and you see all the possibilities and how active this city is, right? And they're like, oh, I didn't know Columbus was, you know, the 14th biggest city in the country. And then you see the statistics about how it's one of the fastest growing cities in the country. All that provides opportunity, right? And then to me, it's still, Brian, I don't know about you, but to me, it's still about the people, right? You get here, the people in Columbus, Ohio, you got the Midwestern values. The people are extremely nice. I always felt the love from, whether they are Buckeye fans or not, I've never had really experiences where I was like, man, like Columbus, Ohio has always been really supportive to me. So you start to, as you get older and you mature, you're like, okay, this is a place that has so much to do. And you start thinking about raising a family and settling down, and you're like, Columbus has so much to offer, right? And so I always felt if you took advantage of those friendships you made while you were in school, those connections, I think it's even, I mean, it's on a whole nother level now with the internships and stuff and the Real Life Wednesday opportunities, all that stuff that's been implemented from even when we were here, that you have all the opportunities in the world to continue having a really successful transition, whether your football career is done after Ohio State or whether it's done after 8 to 10 years in the NFL. If you don't set yourself up well after being at Ohio State with all the opportunities laid in front of you, then I always think it's on the student athlete, because you will have all the support around you necessary to get that situated.
Yeah, I agree with James. I mean, I think that it's twofold, right? I mean, you have the culture and the morals and the things that you may like about the people. It is the people, James. No, there's no doubt. But I would say that, you know, you have that one side, but just like the stock market, right? I mean, at the end of the day, it is one of the fastest growing cities in America. So the affordability is really there if you compare it to across the country. And then the upside is really there if you were to do your research on that. So, you know, buying in the stock market early, yeah, it's expensive, yeah, but not what it's going to be in 3 years. So you have culturally, you know, the setup of Columbus and the ability to get in and out of the Columbus airport and how easy that is. And then you also have the affordability with really great jobs and great markets and great earnings. The last thing I'll add, James, is frankly, I think it's so diverse. Like when we had come in recruiting, my first thing I asked is, okay, what do you like? And then whatever they tell me, you know, I have, you know, Dublin I can take you to, or Polaris or Easton or German Village or the Italian Village or, you know, campus or Powell, Ohio, Western. I mean, there's so many different pieces that fit so many different, forms of living and in ways that you want to live. I mean, it's everywhere. Columbus has it all. There's lots of diversity. And I think the affordability has been critical too for guys coming back into town.
You both mentioned this, and James, you touched on it a little bit, but initially, neither of you had an interest in being a coach. You were adverse to the idea in general, but what about coaching inevitably hooked you? Was it talking ball? Was it the game day experience? What was the tipping point where you said, yeah, this is actually what I want to do with my life?
So I'll jump into that too, James, and then you hit it. So I did have a quick little stint doing some media stuff. And as people know about me, I'm probably a little too blunt at times. And, can be good, can be bad, but I think in coaching it's been more proactive, which is really good. But I would say I found myself being critical of athletes in a, in a sense that I didn't enjoy after the fact. I really had like a GM mentality, and I would openly just talk about things. And I said, if I had so many opinions, why wouldn't I just help guys be better than just critique? And I found myself catching myself that way. Like, why be a part of the problem? Be a part of the solution. So to me, that was the simplest form of it. And Coach Meyer blessed me with the opportunity again to get back in the building. Coach Day blessed me with the opportunity to make it, you know, permanent. And really, that's what really did it. So I guess I got into coaching a very organic way, not a premeditated as a player, I'm going to be a coach mindset, but really out of the love for the athletes and really seeing them have great careers, which changed obviously my life forever. I'm hoping to do that for other young men now.
Yeah, I started to think about, so I lost my father in 2020. And I remember thinking about, like, who are the other men in my life that had the biggest impact on me besides my dad? And it was always coaches, right? Jim Tressel, Luke Fickle, Steve Spagnuolo at the, who's now the D coordinator of the Chiefs, Greg Williams. There are always these men that were all, not only like, they were, some were role models, some weren't, but most were, you know, they directed you in a certain way, right? And I remember just thinking to myself, you love to compete. You love the game of football. I mean, it's been everything I wanted to do since I was in fourth grade. And then as Brian said, you start to think of like, what impact can I make on somebody that a coach made on me, right? Like, I know for a fact, when I think of Luke Fickle, didn't always love Luke when I was at Ohio State. He was very demanding, but he was consistent and he was tough. And he made me a more consistent football player, a better person. And he definitely made me tougher. And so you start to think, can I do that for young people, right? And so all of a sudden you start to grind all that together and you're like, yeah, this is what I'm supposed to do. And so when Marcus gave me the opportunity to go to Notre Dame, I was blessed with a room that was a very mature room of linebackers, but you started to see like subtle things that you're trying to teach them. I'm sure Brian has millions of stories like this, but like you'll start to teach them certain techniques that you used as a player, started to teach them certain things on how to prepare for games. And then you see it come on tape and you're like, holy smokes. Like, it's so fulfilling when you see them accomplish something, right, that you have taught them, and you see them elevate their game. And then that becomes like addicting. You're like, man, this is awesome. Like, not only you're impacting them on the field, but you're trying to build relationships. And now hopefully when those young men, right, go off and get married, like you're getting a phone call like, hey, I want you at my wedding because of the time spent investing in them as people. So to me, that's all the hours put into this are like worth it when you see somebody that goes from, you know, point A to point B as a player, and definitely as a person, you see them mature as they go through. So to me, it's been extremely fulfilling, even though this is only, Brian's been doing it for a lot longer than me, but year three total has been extremely fulfilling.
Talk about that a little bit, James. You, both of you are just phenomenal with relationship building with your student athletes. And it starts in recruiting and then it transitions over into, you know, the athletes that you currently coach. Talk about that in today's world, which is different than when you played, with NIL and the transfer situations and all that. Talk about, you know, relationship building today that you have with your athletes.
I think, I mean, there are a lot of factors. You know, there's a couple more factors into what some student athletes will make in their decisions, right? But I think it still comes down to relationships. You can't get in the race down the stretch if you don't have a great relationship with the student athlete and the people that are important to them. You have to, and that takes time. That takes time, not only with recruits, but it takes time with your own current players. And when you spend time with them, when you ask them about their life outside of football, when you ask about school, family, a girlfriend, and you actually get to talk to them on a personal level, next thing you know, when you are consistent with that player, now you can coach them harder. But if you don't have a relationship with them, I think sometimes, and it happened with guys that Brian and I played with, if you don't establish a relationship and you try to talk a certain way to some of these student athletes, it's not going to go very well. And then, Gene, you have to figure out what motivates each and every one of your guys altogether. I knew that I could be coached differently, maybe than Brian, maybe them differently than Marcus. Like, we all receive motivation from different factors, but you find that out through time. And so there's no way to kind of shortchange that process. You have to build, and a lot of it starts in recruiting. You get to know the player, their family, yada, yada, but you have to be consistent. And I always wanted from my coaches, I wanted to know that you cared about me, right? You wanted to make me better, a better player and a better person, but I wanted just consistency. Any meeting room I was in, whether you were the star or not the star player, whatever, I wanted the guy running the meeting to treat everybody the same. And nothing used to bother me more than when there was preferential treatment, star treatment, you know, all this. Like, and I'm not talking about reps. I get that. Hey, there are some dudes that need to hit. We got to save their legs, right? I understand that. I'm talking about the expectation of what you're seeing on film, right? So if I do a certain technique and get off a block one way and someone else does it, you better treat us the exact same in that moment, you know, as far as the expectation. So if you had consistency, then I was great as a player. I could handle the truth if you invest the time in me. I don't know how you feel, Hart, but that's how I view it.
Yeah, I mean, we could probably write a book on relationships, the depth of that, you know, and the different angles. Seriously, I mean, like, and Gene, you know that. So I guess through my experiences, yes, relationship always wins, and it matters. Frankly, it might matter more now than ever because it's so transactional. There's so much like coming at pace, and I just feel like, you know, football is important, and Ohio State, you know, does better football better than anybody in the country. But, you know, the relationship involved underneath that is important. And, you know, James, you have said a couple of things. I mean, time is obviously, right, the most precious resource. How you spend it ultimately tells you what you think about people and what you think about, you know, your time. So that's critical. I would say this. I would say relationships, though, too, in the past. I think that it was very surface level. I think guys in recruiting can kind of, you know, put on a face and really just tell you what you want to hear. I think the biggest thing I've learned is, as much as we feel like it's a one-way road, like, I want him to like me, I want him to like you. Well, you want him to like you for who you are, because if you do, then he'll stay with you because it's who you are. If you give them a relationship and a persona that's not real, and then they get in your room and all of a sudden you're not yourself and you're not who you were in recruiting, that's a major issue. But if you keep it really honest and transparent and create a genuine relationship, right, James, like you're saying, like, that's the biggest part about it all. If I'm myself in recruiting, I see myself again once you get here, then there's no narrative being spun. And I think that's the critical part, because guys like myself and probably James, I'll love you for who you are. Don't tell me what I want to hear. Now, you don't know it at the time. You just may find it. You might love the guy, but the guy doing it does. And so that's the biggest thing you got to be careful of. And genuine relationships are critical, not just relationships. Genuine relationships allow for sustainability. And that's really what I chase. Frankly, it's okay if a great player doesn't want to come here because we don't mesh. That's excellent, because the sustainability there is just not right. And I'm going to wish you well, brother. I'm going to wish you well. But I'm more worried about the culture and sustainability in our room than I am the satisfaction of individuals. So we try to chase that, right, James? And just be very, you know, genuine in the relationship.
So the relationship piece is obviously imperative in the recruiting process and getting someone mm-hmm. to buy into you as a coach in the program. Talk a little bit about the front end of that pipeline before you even start building the relationship. What sort of traits are you looking for in a recruit, in a prospective Buckeye, before you even reach out and try and build that trust? What sort of things are you looking for?
Yeah, I mean, I'll jump into it first. I think obviously athletically, there's nothing worse you could do for a young man than bring him into a room where he can't be successful. So it's not about, oh, is it good enough for me? No. Is this place right for him? And if you take that approach, I think it really works out better in the long run. So athletically, you're checking boxes, in my opinion. Is he big enough? Can he be big enough? Is he strong enough? Can he be strong enough? You know, identifying where he's at now and where he could be, you know, all those parameters, right? I mean, we play with guys that are 4.35s and 4.65s that are 5'10 and they're 6'3". You know, there's windows to everything. And there's not a cookie cutter approach. I do believe athletically, though, you do have to have enough to check that box, or the ability to reach a certain point to check that box. The one thing I'm looking for is that mental makeup. And I use that quote unquote as the athlete. What is that? It's not fully tangible. There's a little bit of a feel to it, but their competitiveness, their drive, the way they communicate, you know, there's opportunities where they break, you know, they'll send me clips and they'll describe the clip, maybe how they describe it can give you a little something. You're always on the lookout for the mental makeup of the athlete, because I feel like the mental makeup of the athlete allows you to unlock what God blessed him with. So whatever that ability he was blessed with, that talent he was blessed with, the mental makeup allows us as a staff to unlock what you're capable of. It's not perfect. I think that's critical. And I would say, secondly, the biggest part through the process, the only thing I owe recruits, in my opinion, in the process is honesty and genuality, being genuine to them. I don't owe them anything other than that. Only thing I do owe through the process is everyone in my room. I owe them and their parents everything, because they chose us and they trusted us. So I will not bring the wrong kind of young man into this room and expose them to the new arrival because I'm out here chasing some kind of athletic goal. That is not going to happen. It is always mental makeup first. And I believe that this room, our room, has done so well because of the peer pressure, both athletically and culturally, to push each other. Like, they're great individuals as people. And then ultimately that becomes great players on the field. If you're fighting off the field, you just made the on field that much harder. So again, that was kind of a long-winded answer, James, you can jump into yours, but that's been my approach when trying to identify before the relationship.
Yeah. I think it starts, like Brian said, with are you finding the right type of person? Not only for your individual room, but I think for Ohio State, because this place is not for everybody. If you want to, I tell kids all the time, like, if you truly want to chase greatness and you want to be known as the best in the world at what you do, you choose a school that's like Ohio State. Now, in reality, not every recruit wants that. They think they do, but there are some kids who want to have a fun time in college, play college football, hope they get to the NFL. They don't want the pressure of trying to live up to a standard that is extremely difficult, right? You have to be amongst the top 1% of 1% when you come to Ohio State. And that's just not talk. Like, the expectations here, Brian and I have lived it, so we don't have to have a car salesman hat on and doing all that. Like, you're expected to win every single game, and that's the reality of it. And you have to perform at a certain level to achieve that. And so when you find the right person who, like Brian said, has the mental makeup to want to go out there and compete, and guess what? I got beat in that last rep. You're not beating the next rep. And you're constantly pushing and pushing, and you hate to lose, and you're about the right things. Like, that to me is what you look for first. You try to get them on the whiteboard, see what their football intelligence is and all that. But looking back to high school, you try to think about, hey, where was I at in these moments too, right? And I think the toughest thing for me as a linebacker evaluator is you can watch some film and be like, man, that kid is a really good high school linebacker. Doesn't mean he's going to be a really good college linebacker. Why? Maybe he's 230 right now and he's 6'1". Well, is he already tapped out? You know, is that the best that he's going to get to? Is Body by Marotti going to be able to get him, you know, any further? Or sometimes there's a 6'1", 205 kid, and next thing you know, you look at some of Mick's, you know, pictures, you're like, holy smokes, that kid became a 235, 6% body fat, you know, freak. You have to kind of measure those things. Like Brian said, what is the future, you know, possibility of this young man? So there are a lot of factors, but to me, it starts definitely, like Brian said, perfectly with the mental makeup.
As I mentioned in the intro, you both had long, highly successful NFL careers. How do you think that plays into your coaching style? And do you think that it gives you additional credibility in coaching players that are hoping to get where you both have been?
I think initially, like when you're a young coach, or young, I guess I say a green coach, having only been 3 years, not young.
You're still a puppy to me.
Hey, we used to get the text, you know, the group text last year today. Hey, young coaches, make sure you're doing this. And I always wanted to respond last year. Not young, but yes, I get it. I'm a young. But so to me, it's when I think that playing does help in the conversation. Reality of it is, all these kids don't remember us playing. They're too young, but their parents do. And so I think for a young, like an experienced coach, right? It can say, hey, look, I'm teaching you these things because X, Y, and Z work. Like, I've lived it. The stuff I'm trying to teach you, I'm not going to waste your time with techniques, with drills that don't show up on game film. Otherwise, we're just wasting time, right? I won't speak for Brian, but I know for a fact, like, Brian has a resume now, right, of the people that he has developed that I think people know Brian as like, oh man, B Hart, I want to go play for him because he develops wideouts, right? Look at the guys who've gotten drafted, and his resume is continuing to live on Sundays. That's the goal when you get into this. You want to have that displayed, you know, on Sundays in the NFL. But I think, yeah, playing, Brian can have the same conversation. Like when he goes and tells somebody about a route and how to attack a football, like they know that he lived it. And so I think that does carry some weight. Doesn't mean that all former players are good coaches, though. Brian hit on that earlier. Like, you have to be able to continue to evaluate yourself, your own teaching style, the way you're presenting it. I can know all this information up here as a player, but if I don't communicate this to the guys actually doing it to where it makes sense to them, no matter if it makes sense to me, it's got to make sense to our guys in the room now. If I don't communicate that well, then I won't be a good coach.
Yeah, James hit on it perfectly. I mean, really, you know, it definitely gave me, when I first started coaching, that definitely gave me some credibility, right? We're always looking for credibility. Like James hit on earlier, you know, he saw a skill that they practice translate to the game or send it to a situation, and he got so excited. So I'm sure James, as a great coach he was, grabbed that clip, put it beside his indie clip, and resold his credibility. Because every time you do that, that's critical. And it's not even just for the young man, it's for the next guy that that's behind him. So it does give you credibility, but that's short-lived. After you get a good couple guys, and you, whether, you know, how they are turning out and how they're doing is really your credibility as a coach. You know, I was talking about as a player. Now, my perception, when things happen, like I can tell guys, that's not hard. I know that. I've been there. Well, that is hard. I know that. I know I'm asking you to do something hard, but keep trying. Like, that goes a long way when you have that conversation with an athlete. But I think that, like you said, James, I mean, at some point it is, there's some credibility there, but now it's probably the whole resume, right? I mean, Wayzata to Ohio State, going to, so not to go to Minnesota, good decision, came to Ohio State. And then you see where he went, winning multiple awards. And then those awards turn into, you know, it should have been a better draft position, but we'll leave that alone. To a great NFL career. And then really, you know, he's an all-time leading tackler for the Rams. I mean, so there's a hell of a wreck of a resume. Now he's in that chase for the first 3-4 classes of putting together what his mental makeup of himself he can put into an athlete. And I kind of went through that, right? Didn't win nearly awards, didn't do it nearly as drafted as high as he did, but, you know, it's all good fun. So great opportunity to impact young men. And that's all we're really chasing. I think what James will say on too, we're still learning now. I mean, the biggest thing I will take is I try to watch Instagram and talk to people, the ones I like, and take something from them. It's a short list of guys that I really look at and trust, but I do have that list and I do communicate with them just so I can bring those guys new things, new skills, new drills to make sure I stay up with the times.
So both of you are phenomenal guys. Talk about, what do you do to keep harmony in your lives? You're great husbands, you're great fathers, but you know that takes a mentality too. When you're grinding like both of you are and giving so much of yourself to so many other people, how do you keep grounded? How do you keep the harmony that you need in order to continue to be successful?
Man, I think it's realizing, you know, when you get home with your kids, you know, out in the off season, right? There's sometimes in season where they'll be sleeping already when you get home. When you have those moments, you need to remember it's the first time that they're seeing you, right, in that day. They don't care how tired you are, right? And so, like, you have to almost have a renewed sense of energy, I feel anyway, Hart. Like, when I get home, it's like, that's the first time my girls are seeing me. They're going to be, it doesn't matter if it's right before bedtime, they're going to be juiced. So I can't come home and like, oh, dad's tired, dad's worn out. I try to leave the stress of the workplace, you know, in the driveway and really have a fresh mind when I walk through the door, because they deserve the best of you as well. You can't, it's not fair to your family if you just pour the best and the most energy of you into your players and the sport only, and you don't provide that same thing for your family. So it's all about priorities. To me, my family will always come first. Thankfully, my wife she knows what this lifestyle entails, and she's actually been one to try to push me to do it. She felt I was called to be a coach, which is helpful, because if you don't have someone by your side that is supporting you, it could be, I can see how it'd be a very stressful relationship for marriages if you're in this, right? Because a lot of times they're taking a back seat to the hours and all that. But if they support you and they believe that it's what you're called to do, then it really is a blessing. So for me, it's all about, can you clear your mind, get your work stuff done at work, and that when you come home, it's truly family time, and try to give them that same energy and attention.
Well, I would say that it's not a profession. It's not a job. It's a lifestyle, being a coach. It is not something you can check in and out of, in my opinion. I think that James hit on it. Your significant other is a critical, maybe the most critical part in this endeavor, and understanding she's joining a lifestyle. She's not supporting her husband in a profession. It's a lifestyle. So, you know, I know that, Gene, you kind of, it's a great question, because, you know, when I read a lot of some of these books and high performing people, like, if you really want to be a high performer, there is no such thing as balance. There's no such thing. But now being able to make it work, if you will, and keep things as satisfied as you can on both sides of the front, that's probably what we're chasing, right? So I guess a couple of my ways would be, you know, like James said, when you're home, be as present as you can. But to say recruiting is not part of our household would be a lie. I mean, my wife is, you know, willing to talk to people and be on the phone or be around, and my kids are too, and they're getting the pictures and the FaceTimes while I'm at home, you know. And but I would say that when we do check out and we go on vacation, man, I make sure that recruits know, and the family, and the guys in the room know I'm on vacation. The phone is away. So, you know, try to do that. I think the biggest thing with Coach Day is creating this family environment. I mean, my family's in this building at least once a week, at least. And frankly, that's part of the things the parents of the recruits enjoy. They want their kids surrounded by our families. And so it's a very family environment. So again, it's part of the lifestyle. They are in the building. My wife and I, we do our Bible app every morning together, and it provides opportunity for communication. So that's been awesome. You know, at least from me and her standpoint, we definitely allot time for dinner dates or going to dinner together from my wife and I standpoint. And then our kids, you know, obviously we do the best we can with it. FaceTime's critical. FaceTime gets you in front of the kids we've never had probably in the past. So that's been a big part of it. It's definitely a balancing act, Gene, as you know. So trying to find ways to make that work. But to say it's fully balanced, that is not the case. That won't happen in a life where you're trying to trace, you know, a greater goal maybe sometimes as a coach. And but James, those are probably the couple that popped to mind for me, you know, from a week to week basis, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense, Brian. I mean, I walked away from balance in life a long time ago.
Yeah.
I came up with the harmony thing, you know. It's there's a, like you said, it's a lifestyle. So it's, there has to be, you know, I don't know why I heard it somewhere, and it sounded better than trying to chase a balance, because there's no.
Yeah,
balance.
Harmony is a great way to put it. You're right. You're exactly right.
Trying to make it work. You know, one of the things that, you know, I admire about both of you, and actually, Brian, I think when Malcolm Jenkins came back and talked to the team, you and I were standing in the back, and you mentioned it in my ear about mentality when he was talking, and both of you had it, and others that you know that perform exceptionally well. Talk a little bit about self-awareness. Both of you are self-aware like there's no tomorrow. I remember when we had dinner at my house, and I think Malcolm was there as well, and I was so impressed just with both of you having this unbelievable understanding of you. Talk about self-awareness a little bit.
Yeah, that's probably one of the biggest blessings someone can have, honestly. I mean, to be your constant coach, right? I mean, that's really what it is. When we were athletes, I got coached daily on things to do better and better and better and enhance. When I became a coach, I had no one coaching me. But I felt like Coach Hazel's approach to me in the receiver room, just how he coached, I was always self-assessing. I'm self-assessing my game. I'm really self-assessing my personal life. But as you guys all know, like, it's never perfect, right? Professionally or personally. But like, if you can have that honest conversation and your self-assessment to get better, God, if you be your own self-coach, I think that's critical. Now, you know, once you get that self-assessment, your ability to enact and act upon that is probably the biggest. The ability to, you know, apply is probably just as important as the identification. But, you know, without one or the other, you're hopeless. I think I've been very blessed with that trait. I don't know where it came from. I think my father had an entrepreneurial mind. He had his own company for a long time. You know, I've always chased, you know, I always maybe the opinion in me, Gene, you know, that always kind of resonated there. I'm always a
James,
I'm always
we're familiar with
opinion.
that, aren't we? We're familiar
I
with
know, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
that
But I'm trying to, you know, give my opinion of myself to myself. So I don't know. I try to do that, but I think it's critical, Gene. And I think that surrounding those around you that you can bounce your critiques off of for more validation or more critique, I think is critical as well. You can't just self-assess yourself the whole time. You got to have those around you that'll help you in that process. But constantly do it, Gene. Always looking for advice. I appreciated the decade by decade book you bestowed to me, because that allows me to maybe understand fully why my brain is so crazy at different stages in life. So, but yeah, James, how about yourself?
No, I'm with you. I think as a player, Gene, I've told this to our room. I said, if you are the most critical and the hardest on yourself, then there's nothing I can say to you as a coach that will make you feel sensitive. So I always felt like if I was going to grade myself truthfully when I watched practice, it didn't matter what Luke said to me, because he was right. If I'm honest with myself, now, if I wanted to make excuses and I wanted to kind of, you know, cut corners and all that, then I would get mad at coach, like, hey, you're being unfair. But I always tried to be my hardest critic. So when I went into a meeting room, nothing that they said to me really offended me, because I'd be like, yeah, you're right. Now, if you didn't see eye to eye on something, okay, it happens once in a while. But if you're really honest with yourself, and if I reflected back, I would start getting salty when I was maybe getting older and I couldn't make certain plays. And I was really, it's a reflection on me. I was mad at myself. I couldn't make it, right? It wasn't coach's fault. He expected it out of me. I was just getting old and slower. And I was never really fast. I just got slower, if that makes sense. So I think
Agreed.
if you're that way as a player, and then you are that way as, like, I was a perfectionist by nature anyway, which sometimes is a blessing, sometimes it's not. But you're constantly, like Brian said, you have to have a crew around you that can speak truth to you, but you got to be humble enough to listen. And you have to be humble enough to reflect and look at yourself and be like, okay, where are you personally, professionally, and all those different areas of your life? And you got to have this kind of mindset to always want to be better, right? There's always a goal or something to chase, right? So you have to want to be better, whether that's in any area of your life. How can I add things to my life that will help me get better, and what do I need to remove to help me be better? And I think you have to constantly, but if you don't, like Brian, if you're not really to act on it or apply it, then it's just all, you know, it's just all fluff. You got to really to apply it and have that kind of self-reflection on what you need to make yourself continue to climb, you know, up and to the right.
You know, I gotta say this, Gene, too. Just, I mean, hearing him talk, I mean, that's what you're looking for in recruiting. Like, you're looking for that conversation. And I think, and I kind of brought it up to you. I remember in 2000, was it 13, James, when Jane, you and your wife invited myself, Malcolm, and James over to your house for dinner that you alluded to. Like, I guess my question would be, why did you recruit us for that dinner? Why did you pick us? And just looking back now, we didn't know where we would be 10 years later, but literally 10 years later, we kind of are where we are. Why us three? And I'm kind of curious on your take on
You know, well, first of all, Brian, you know it was Sheila. You
that.
guys know it was my wife, right?
All right, fair enough. Just the smarter one of the two. I get it. Okay.
But you know, no, you know, it's something I recognize in all three of you. You had this that mentality that you and I talked about when Malcolm was here. I recognize that in all three of you. And Sheila and I talked about it. She was a better athlete between the two of us, and you know, an Olympian, and she's got that mentality as well. And we were just kind of enamored with all three of you, and just wanted to sit down and talk about what you guys were doing and what was next. And, you know, periodically we've had a number of different athletes in different sports at our home. But she and I reflect periodically, particularly now that both of you are coaching here, about the blessing that we had to have you in our house. And when Malcolm came back, it really hit us that, you know, we had three exemplar people that at the time when we picked you three, you know, we didn't know where you'd be, obviously, but it reaffirmed that our assessment of talent, our assessment of people, you know, was really good. And you know, we've had a number of athletes in different sports in our home, and all of them have done exceptionally well. But you know, we just felt like there was a connection. And all three of you were kind of, you know, in that married slash, you know, relationship world. And Mrs. Smith wanted to have the conversation that she had with all of you that we'll leave at the house. But so anyway, yeah, you guys are just special in so many different ways. Ben, you good? You got a question there?
Yeah, I was just going to, we touched on this a little bit before we hit record, but I'd love to have the two of you describe for our listeners kind of what this point in the calendar year looks like for you. You know, spring ball is in the books, successful spring practices. What does your day-to-day look like now, and how does that help build towards the season?
Yeah, so we just finished up spring ball. Great spring ball led by Coach Day. And so now we're kind of in the exit phase, if you will, exit meetings. How did I do, coach? What can I do better at? What's my path? Where do you see me now? Where do you see me in the future? All those kind of conversations. We're finishing up exams as well. So those guys, over the next 2 weeks, we finish up exams, and then they'll have a little bit of a break to where they'll get to go home, see their families, get some off time, maybe work out on their own a little bit. But those meetings that I alluded to are pretty heartfelt, pretty you know, big part of maybe decision making, especially with the current college football and the portal and where am I at and what's my path. So very valuable meetings, each independently. So can't be taken lightly, and can be a stressful time for our athletes and for some coaches. After that, we are also looking at booking and setting up, I should say, our May recruiting. It's a critical time at Ohio State. We get out, be able to see each school or each athlete one time in an eval period. So if we have multiple athletes at one school, we got to make sure we're all aligned with me and Coach Walton and maybe Coach Kelly. And we got to be at that same school somewhere in the country on that same day to see certain athletes. So a lot of planning goes into that. A lot of travel goes into that. We get prepped to leave on Sunday, you know, Sunday evenings to get ready to work at 6 a.m. workouts Monday morning. You know, you might start in Cali and then finish your day, you know, in Virginia. So we're a lot of time away from the family. So a lot of the families are kind of prepping for that. But a lot of organization is going on right now to prepare for those next 2 months of execution.
I think that's the main thing is, you know, right now you're trying to figure out, as Brian said, like if there's a school where there's a lot of guys at, we all got to make sure we're in sync going down there. And you never want to go into a school without knowing if there's another coach on your staff that has a prospect that they need to see, right? Because if you do and you don't let them know, now all of a sudden it could be Keenan Bailey, our tight ends coach, there's a tight end. Now he can't go see a kid he wanted to see because I didn't do my due diligence, right, to make sure that everyone was on the same page. So we're actually going to have a staff meeting here in a little bit about it and try to, you have all these plans. Hey, I'm going here, 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 here. And then you never know. It could blow up in a little, in a little bit. You have to kind of, you just have to be flexible. That's all you got to do. You got to be able to be flexible. And thankfully we have a great, great staff that helps us and a great, great people over that help us with travel as well. And so it's exciting to get out there and see kind of who could be the future at Ohio State.
Fantastic. Well, I know this is a very busy time of the year for you guys. I appreciate you taking the time to have a discussion with us. Very insightful. I'm sure the listeners are going to learn and take away quite a bit from it. But That does it for another episode of the Gene Smith Podcast presented by Incova Insurance. Thank you again to Brian and James for joining us today. We really appreciate everyone who has listened and subscribed thus far. Be sure to leave a review wherever you find your podcasts. Until next time, for Gene Smith and everyone at Ohio State Athletics, I'm Ben Waite. Be well and go Bucks.
Go Bucks. Thanks, Brian. Thanks, James.